Welcome to the Flow Podcast, fearlessly leading our way. This podcast is a space dedicated to spotlighting the unfiltered voices of Black women in their unique leadership journeys. I am your host, Angela B. Harris. I'm an award-winning coach, speaker, author, and champion for Black women. Make sure you like and subscribe to this podcast to stay connected to our conversation. Let's get ready to flow. Welcome back, everyone. This episode of the Flow Podcast is sponsored by 2638 Management Group, LLC. A leading provider of dynamic coaching and consulting services designed to empower individuals and organizations. 2638 Management Group, LLC specializes in working with women and underrepresented minority groups to foster leadership development and diversity and inclusion. Their unique approach and commitment to forward-thinking businesses sets them apart from the competition. Their ideal clients are organizations eager to foster leadership excellence and individuals at all career stages who seek to unlock their full potential and achieve their goals. Experience the transformative power of their executive coaching, workshops, assessments, and consulting services. Visit them on the web at 2638managementgroup.com to learn more and schedule a consultation today. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Flow Podcast, where we dive deep into the stories and journeys of incredible Black women. I am your host, Angela V. Harris. I'm so excited about today's topic and to introduce you to our phenomenal guest, Lisa Anderson, who is a chief HR officer with over 25 years of HR experience. She is also a certified leadership and career coach. Her coaching business focuses on women in leadership who want to intentionally work on finding their leadership voice, building their leadership courage, and increasing their leadership presence so that they can propel their careers. Her book, Invisible Professional to Influential Leader, is a leadership tip book for women leaders who want to lead confidently and authentically. Welcome to the show, Lisa.
Thank you, Angela. I'm so excited to be here.
I am so excited to have you here as well. Now, listeners, I think you are in for a huge treat today because we are going to discuss some of the unwritten rules in corporate America, the things you wish you knew. So you're going to want to get your journals ready to take notes. Now that we've gotten to know Lisa, let's dive in. Lisa, I did some research on human resources demographics in the United States, and according to Zipia, 62.5% of all HR professionals are women, and Black professionals make up roughly 7.7% of the industry. Does that sound right to you?
That's correct. I am in a woman-dominated industry when it comes to HR. But it's interesting because a lot of us as HR professionals, we are leadership in other industries. And even though the HR profession is women, you know, mostly women, I am in a technology industry, which is male dominated. So wow. You definitely have to navigate, even though the industry, you know, the HR profession is mostly made up of women. We are operating in capacities and industries that are sometimes male dominated.
Good perspective. And I worked in tech, so I know very well that it's a male-dominated industry.
Absolutely, absolutely. So really about navigating, right? Sometimes you are going to be the only female in that room. A lot of times I was only female and the only person of color in the room, as I was growing my career. So really understanding how to navigate that.
Well, tell us about your journey. What led you to pursue a career in human resources?
Yeah, so my undergrad degree is in management. And I'm going to date myself a little bit. Back in the day when I was when I was coming up, at my university, they did not have back then a degree in human resource management. So I ended up getting a degree in management. And around my junior or senior year, I started taking electives called personnel management. Now I'm really dating myself. And I really became interested in that part of the curriculum. And so that's when I decided, wow, I want more of this. As with a management degree, you do get all the other things, finance, IT, marketing, but I really had an interest in the people side. And so that's how my career started. And when I graduated, I actually went to work at Walmart in their management training program. And so I went into retail management as a new manager trainee. And, in that program, you rotate around the store to learn the entire store. And I got to the personnel section of the training and I no longer wanted to rotate. It was like, I want to stay here. But then back then, personnel was an hourly position. And they said to me, well, if you really want to do personnel or HR, you're going to have to relocate to Bentonville, Arkansas, and go to our headquarters. And I said, no, that's not going to happen. So that was my first, touch into the human resource space. And I knew, I said, okay, I'm going to get my experience at Walmart, but I knew that my next move was going to be to move into the HR field, doing strictly HR, not all the other things, that comes in retail operations and, shipping and receiving. I wasn't interested in any of those things. I really wanted to hone in and focus on the HR perspective.
Okay. And what was the next step, the next move for you after Walmart?
Yeah, so I ended up going to a healthcare system, and it was a very interesting model because this healthcare system created their own temporary agency in-house. And that was kind of innovative and creative back in the early 90s. And so that's where I ended up, and I was a recruiter. And we filled positions that were in the hospital system. And that was my first taste of HR, just being strictly HR. And I absolutely loved it. I loved the recruiting perspective of it. And of course, with that, you're recruiting people, but then, you're still dealing with, people issues, people problems. And so I said, recruiting is great, but I really want to figure out like there's more to HR than recruiting. And so I just got this thirst to, I wanted to learn more about the field. And as I continued to just learn, I decided to go back to school for my master's degree, and that was in human resource management. I didn't want to do the MBA. I just wanted HR. And I said, let me do that, get in there. And I started learning more and more and more. And that's when I transitioned from recruiter to an HR, they're called business partners today. Back then they were called HR generalists, but now they're HR business partners. And I continued to move up the ranks. So I went from HR business partner to HR manager, the HR director, then VP of HR, and now I'm a chief HR officer. So I literally moved up the corporate ladder in HR.
That's incredible. It sounds like you definitely identified your passion very early, in your career. You just pursued that passion, just remain curious and further your knowledge and your learning.
Absolutely. And that was the thing. I'm a lifelong learner. So every time I got to the one phase, and here's the other thing. Back then, it was taboo to job hop. Sort of still is probably today too. People are looking at your resume. How long did you stay here? But it was really taboo to job hop back then. And I really didn't care. I had this boldness that I wanted to get different experiences. And I was like, okay, I would work with one organization. And it was almost like the minute I became bored, I was like, okay, what's next? What's next? And I was unapologetic about moving. It was a running joke with my girlfriends. They were like, we're not putting your work number in our cell phones because as soon as we put it in there, you're going to be moved on to the next thing. And I was like, yeah, keep up with me because, I was just really unapologetic about wanting to get new experiences and just really wanted to learn more in different environments. So, it was funny back then, but now that I look back over my career, I'm like, wow, I made some bold moves, but that, each move I was putting new things in my toolkit. And I said, okay, well, here we go. Now, I had to get a little crafty and get intentional about how I articulated those things because when you move like that, you need to have a story about behind why you're moving from one. Because that, the recruiters are going to ask in the interview, like, you were only there for a year. Why did you move and go here? And, I was very transparent and honest. I was like, hey, over here, I was able, this new role, they had compensation experience that I wasn't getting here. So yes, I took the move to for growth and learning. And some people liked that and some people didn't. But I was like, hey, I'm on a mission here to learn as much as I can and to get experiences in different areas. And if I can't get it here, then I'm gonna seek it out.
And essentially, you were creating your own rotational program. You talked about starting your career at Walmart, where they had the defined rotational program, but you essentially created your own. You talked about being bold and unapologetic about it, obtaining those new leadership experiences.
Yeah, I believe in that because you're not gonna know what you don't like until you get into it, right? Like if you have a curiosity about something, you can absolutely do the research and do your homework on it. But in my opinion, the experiences are golden. And there were some things in HR that I did, and I was like, don't enjoy that as much. But if I had never, dabbled in it or did it, I would have never known that that's an area that I wasn't too excited about. So for me in my career, HR professionals, HR is so broad. So we have the opportunity to either specialize in a certain area, whether it's benefits or whether it's compensation, whether it's recruiting. And what I learned about myself is that I love variety and I get bored easily. So you have to learn things about yourself, right? And so I decided that to never specialize. I love being a generalist where I know a little bit about each thing, enough for me to be a little dangerous. And usually, especially in bigger organizations, when you're a generalist or HR business partner and you know a little bit about everything, usually you have people in the organization that specialize and they support you. So in my career, and this is how I guess I know this is how I moved up the corporate ladder. I've always been in tune with what's going on with the business. And then I would take that business challenge or business issue, bring it back within HR, and I'm able to articulate what the business issue is into HR terms. And then usually there's a specialist behind me that is helping me, and that's their domain. So, for example, compensation. I'm not a compensation expert, but in my career in the bigger companies, I will be able to take that issue from my business unit, come back to the comp specialist and say, hey, we're looking at this number of jobs. I need you to do an analysis and see what the market is paying. I'm not doing the analysis. The comp specialist is doing the analysis. And he or she would do what they're do, you know, what they do in their zone of genius and bring the information back. And then I'm able to articulate it back to the business. So that has been something I've enjoyed over my career. And again, one of the reasons why I just never decided to specialize.
I want to go back to something you said. You said that we won't know what you don't like until you really get into it. And I know sometimes we may self-sabotage ourselves. We may be fearful of being bold and being unapologetic and taking those risks. What advice would you have for someone that may be hesitant to make that first step and put themselves out there?
Oh, that's a great question. Because I will share that even though early in my career I had that boldness and unapologetic and moving, I did get to a point in my career where fear crept in and I became invisible. I don't remember like the experience. I don't remember what happened that made me like lose my voice, but it happened. So what the advice that I would give to anyone else who may, have a fear of stepping out or moving, I always ask, okay, you got to go through that analysis for yourself. So what's the worst that could happen? So if you step out there and you try something new or different or, you're trying things out, or you step out there and you get to the next place or next position, and it's like, oh boy, what in the world have I done here? I'm really not liking or enjoying this, right? So what you want to do is, have this plan in your head, like, okay, am I going to stay here and try to get the best, right, wrong, or indifferent, pretty or ugly? Get the best out of the experience so I can prepare myself for the next move, whatever that looks like. And then be able to articulate. Once you have that experience, which wasn't so great, you know what to look for in your next experience. So you're going to be asking some specific questions to make sure that whatever you just left, you're not going to get it in the next opportunity, right?
Right.
So to me, every lesson, I never call it mistakes. It's always lessons learned. What is the lesson learned that you got out of the last experience? And even though it doesn't feel good when you're in it, because I've been there too, you're there and it doesn't feel all that great. You always try to put the what is the lesson that I'm supposed to get out of this? And what do I want to make sure when I do make that next move? What do I want to make sure is not in the next job because I didn't enjoy it over here? So that's the balance. So, those are the questions you have to ask yourself before you make the move. What's the worst that could happen? Well, the worst that could happen, I can get into the next role, absolutely hate it, and immediately start to put myself back out there. That's the worst that can happen, right? And then hopefully that'll bring down some of the level of fear, or it would teach you not to step out 100%. What is there? How is there another way you can get that experience without leaving where you are? Can you go and can you volunteer somewhere? Can you network with other people doing the job? What are some other things you can do besides putting all your eggs over there? So it really is about the risk that you're willing to take.
And from what you shared, it's mitigating that risk. It's identifying what's the worst that can happen, and putting those backup plans, and in some cases, the backup plan in place.
Exactly. And then also ask yourself, what's the best thing that could happen? Right now, I don't know. What's the best? What if I get over there and I absolutely love it? And because I never took the step, I would have never discovered that. So really is it really is about, asking yourself those internal questions before you decide, don't go out there without a plan. And really being honest with yourself, right? Now, back in when I was making those moves, I had no plan. I was just out there. The only plan I had was I knew I wanted to grow and I knew I wanted to learn. And I was willing to take all the risks to get the different experiences under my belt. And sometimes it worked out for me and sometimes it didn't, right? So it really is about, what your tolerance is. But in my career, I just, me able to get all those different experiences really helped me propel in my career.
Lisa, can we get real for a second?
Absolutely.
Okay, I want to share some scenarios with you.
Okay.
I had a conversation with a Black woman who felt like the wind had been taken out of her sails. My heart dropped when I heard that, but I get it. She's been with the organization for 8 years, excelled in her roles, yet she's never been promoted. I know in my career, I've checked the boxes, but I was told I didn't meet the competencies, or I was given additional requirements to be considered for the role. Meanwhile, the managers didn't meet the competencies themselves. I know this story is pretty common for Black women. What
Yes.
advice do you have for someone in a situation like this?
Oh, yes. And unfortunately, Angela, I have heard it too, right? I've heard the stories, especially from other Black women. I've had that story, as a Black woman. And now I'm a Black woman in C-suite, right? So here's the advice. If she's been with the organization for 8 years and probably blood, sweat, and tears. And 8 years is a long time to be sitting under someone, a manager or whoever, right? Her leader, and not be recognized or not be, recognized for her talent, not even be promoted, right? So my advice is to start getting your ducks in a row if you don't already have, start cleaning up your resume. And yeah, I would be, if I was in her shoes, I would absolutely be in the market because I need to find, number one, a manager that supports me, right? Number two, I need to find a culture that supports me. And number three, I need to find somewhere where, the organization recognized my talents. Clearly, it is not here. Now, it will be interesting to see how the that scenario plays out, because if that young lady goes out, gets another opportunity, come in house and resigns, I wonder if everybody gonna have the look of shock on their face. Because if I was her, I'd be like, why y'all surprised? I've been here 8 years. Why are you surprised? I'm out. I have to go. Clearly, I'm not valued here. Now, I would ask, have she had any career conversations with her manager? Those are some of the things I would ask. And if she's had career conversations, and I tell my women this, if you have had career conversations with your manager, it's also okay for you to have career conversations with other leaders in the organization, just in case that manager or your manager is not sharing. So build the relationships across the organization and let people know what your aspirations are, not just your direct leader. Because I've seen that where the direct leader is the roadblock, right? I've seen that in organizations. And if depending on what company or what culture, what industry she's in, if they're doing talent review meetings, where we're talking about talent in the room and this is an HR, and her name is never brought up in the room, what is that? Because, I'm usually in those meetings and I really have, I know across the organization that sometimes if I don't see women on the charts, I was like, where's Susie's name? And it puts the manager on the hot spot, on the hot seat, right? Because why is her name not on this list? I heard about XYZ project she was on, and then other leaders in the room would start to chime up. Oh yeah, I was on a project with her as well. Okay, well, if she's not ready, what are we doing to develop her to get her ready? Because why is her name not on the chart? So, but again, that takes some courage, right, to really have those discussions and to really question why people are not. And someone been in the company 8 years and have not had a promotion, I would be looking at the leader like, what is going on? Why is she there and why aren't we developing her? Why is she not ready? And she's been she's been with the company 8 years. So I know that's real. So that would be my advice. Now you're talking to the person that was unapologetic
And bold.
and bold and courageous, not thinking through. So, but yeah, 8 years, come on. And my question to her is it going to change?
What else do you need to see?
Exactly. And I can only imagine how she's feeling. Frustration, disappointment, all of those things, right? All of the emotion.
Invisible, like you said, invisible. That contributes
Invisible,
to
yes,
feeling invisible.
absolutely invisible. And what is that doing to your mental health? Day in, day out. Because sometimes we get comfortable. We get very comfortable. And it gets to be the fear of the unknown. Okay. Yeah, there is a fear of the unknown. But I know this crazy that I'm in right now. And I may be willing to take the risk because what if it is a great move? So sometimes that fear will stifle us and paralyze us, and then then the inner thoughts come in like I'm not good enough, because of the way I'm being treated here. But what if? Wow, what if you get somewhere and they welcome and embrace and they see the value, you're actively contributing, you're rewarded. What if all of that? And you're sitting where you are, right? So that would be my advice.
And like you said, you have to find environments where you have the supportive management, the supportive culture, and where your talents are recognized.
Absolutely. I am big on that. One of my leaders took me under her wing, and she's still my mentor to this day. And I learned so much from her, especially around executive presence, Ooh, I had never seen an HR leader that can go into a room and demand and like command a room and not being ugly or nasty, just her presence. And she just has so much credibility with the leadership team that they wouldn't start a meeting without her. And me sitting back as a mentee and, being her subordinate, I was like, wow, I had something to aspire to, right? I saw it in action, right? And I was like, how do I get to be that, but yet stay authentic to me? Because she had her style, right? And when you see and when you have supportive leadership like that, and she taught me, she would come out of key meetings and share what was going on, right? She was the first one to put my name up for promotion. You know, that I at that organization, I was there 9 years, and I started there as a director under her. I was a director for 5 years, and then I got promoted to VP for a division. And she was a part of that, right? I'm not in the room, so she was the one putting my name in that room to say, hey, she's ready. Let's put her, give her that opportunity, right? So the leadership, your management and your leadership is critical. And if you don't have that connection, or if you don't believe your leader have your best interests, then it's time to either move internally to get from under that person or move externally.
You said that particular leader took you under her wing, which is great. But if women are invisible and you talked about being the first and the only in some of your organizations, if we're in those situations and people aren't even seeing us, how can we get someone to notice us to even take us under their wing? Because sometimes we may be raising our hands too, but no one is looking our way. What can we do?
So now, if you're raising your hand and the people just not seeing you, then that's a culture thing that you're in, right? Like, the good news for me is that I was in a okay culture. My experience was I lost my voice in the culture. So the inner I was doing great, right? Director, I had gotten promoted to VP, and I lost my voice when I did that transition from director to VP. So as a director, I was still like in my zone, like boldness, whoo-hoo, doing my thing. When I was promoted to the VP level, then my inner voice, the critic, showed up. And was like, oh boy, look at you now. You're a VP. You don't belong here. That's the inner stuff, right? And the inner voice. And so I had, people knew me in the organization. I wasn't brand new. So I had built the credibility from the director level, but as a VP, I was in a new division. So new people. So I had to build the credibility all over again. And I started having this feeling like I didn't belong in the room. And I lost my voice or became invisible specifically in meetings. So I would go to these meetings. And again, in my previous division, I was active, I was contributing, I was adding value. But then I get to my new division as the VP, and I just was sitting in meetings quiet, not saying a word. And when you show up like that, meeting after meeting after meeting, your colleagues and the peers you're in the room are thinking, oh, well, she really doesn't have anything to contribute. She has no value to add. She's sitting here quiet. So they started ignoring me, which made me feel even more invisible. So that's how it, showed up for me. So I was in a culture where they recognized me. Angela, what you just said was sometimes women, we're in cultures, and you are raising your hand, and the people are just like, okay, I see her, but I don't see her. And that's where it gets frustrating because you're like, okay, then why am I here? I'm not shy, and I'm not, I'm trying to get my point across. So clearly, I don't have value here. And then the question you have to ask yourself is, can you change it? If you can't partner, or if you can't see, get anyone in the leadership to see what you bring to the table and see what value you add, and if it's across the board, you can't get anybody to recognize, then you got to ask yourself the question, maybe this is not the right culture for me. What I tend to see, especially as Black women, we stay too long.
Yes, longer than we should.
Yes. And it becomes a detriment to our mental health. And that is not okay. So I will bounce from job to job, right? If I have to try to find that culture. And I have a story, because again, when you're interviewing, you have to really be able to articulate why you're moving. And I am very transparent in interviews. I tell you, hey, that was not a good fit for me culturally. So can I ask a few questions? What's your culture like? Because I don't want, and I want them to scream me out. If they're like, oh, she's a little too vocal. Okay.
Spicy, she's
Yeah.
spicy. Okay.
X me, because you're doing me a favor. Because if I get in here and it's the culture's not right, then I'm gonna be frustrated, upset, disappointed, angry, all the things, right? So for me, especially when you get to the director, vice president, that leadership level, especially, you want to be transparent about the things that you're looking for in these interviews, right? And if it's not the right fit, they will screen you out, which is okay. And sometimes you will make the decision based on what you're hearing, what you're feeling, your intuition. You need to
Yes,
listen to that.
very
And
important.
sometimes you will screen yourself out and be like, this just doesn't, the hairs on the back of my neck is standing up. I don't know what it is. I can't put my finger on it, but I'm gonna have to pass. And that's okay, right? So it really is about finding the work environment and the culture and the leadership, your leader that can support you as you go into these environments, as you go into these workplaces.
Because we spend so much of our time and lives at work, we deserve to be in places where we are celebrated and appreciated, and we actually enjoy what we do, because like you said, that impacts your mental and physical health in the long run.
Absolutely. Day in and day out, and you're going somewhere where you're invisible. Let me just be clear. If I had not been able to transition and find my voice in meetings and be able to transition myself out of that feeling, I probably would have ended up leaving because my colleagues' behaviors weren't going to change. Because my behavior had not changed. So they had started ignoring me. And the way I shifted out of that, I had to go back to my why. My why. It is not a mistake. You're in the room. And as the, I had a spiritual awakening because I came out of a meeting. And we had just made a business decision to shut down one of our divisions, our product lines, and it was going to impact 100 people. And as the top HR leader in the room, how dare I sit in that room quiet? 100 people, 100 people and their families are about to be impacted. And I'm the top HR leader. And when I left that room, I had to go in my office and close the door because the voice was like, look, I put you in that room. It is not a mistake. Take care of my people. So guess what? When I came back for the next meeting, oh, I had questions. I had a full plan. The people in the room was like, oh my goodness, who is this? Because my behavior had, I was like, look, we got to do ABC, XYZ. Who's doing what? I got to take care of the people. We're about to lay off 100 people. And that was my shift. I was like, okay, that's my why. I got into HR because I like to help people. And you sitting in a room quiet when these decisions are being made, how are you taking care of the people? So when I showed up for the next meeting, I was a, they were like, who is this? Oh, this is a new Lisa. We got work to do. And, you know, here are all my questions. How are we going to take care of our people, right? So, and that was my experience of shifting. Everybody has their own, you know, experiences. And that's why I wrote the book, Invisible Professional to Influential Leader, because I'm committed to helping other women leaders because I felt alone when I was going through that. And I want other women to know you are not alone. There are other women having their own experiences. I didn't trust anyone in the organization because by that time, my leader had retired. She was no longer in the company. So I didn't trust anyone that I could take that to. So I ended up going outside of the organization with one of my mentors and trying to get help with that.
Lisa, I know you have a very unique story about a time when you flexed that boldness and your leadership courage in the heat of the moment. Can you tell our listeners about that?
Yes. And remind me, Angela, to tell you what I've done since, you know, you and I had an initial conversation about this. But yeah, so the same organization I was with for 9 years, we had acquired 14 companies during my 9 years. But in the end, this is the thing when you're doing mergers and acquisitions. So in the end, my company, we ended up getting acquired. So I've been on both sides of mergers and acquisitions. And so when you're at the VP level, you know, all of the leadership knows once you get acquired, you know, there's kind of a sense that the new company is going to bring their own leaders in. So, you know, all of us were prepared. We were ready. You know, we were, it wasn't a surprise for us because we participated in the due diligence, all that. So the new leadership came in. And so I got called to a meeting. And I thought, again, remember, you always got to have the plan, right? You're like, okay, let me map this out. There's two things that can happen. Either they're going to say, the new leader is going to say, okay, Lisa, we do not have a role for you in the new organization. So we're going to prepare for transition. Okay, so that's option number one. Option number two is, hey, Lisa, we would like for you to stay. You know, we have a role for you in the organization, and we want you to stay VP, you know, and let's talk through that. So those were the only two options that I had in my head going into the meeting. What I didn't prepare for was the third option. And the third option was, okay, Lisa, I get in the meeting. And the third option was, well, we want to demote you from the VP of HR to an HR business partner and have you report into a young lady who has 7 years of HR experience. And I was a vice president with only over 15 years of experience. So that was the thing that took me by surprise, because I was like, huh? Come again? Like, what? So,
But now.
yeah, it took me by surprise because I didn't think that that would be an option, right? So it took me by surprise, and I said, I repeated it. I said, you want me to report to this young lady who has 7 years of HR experience? Okay. So I politely said, professionally said, okay, we can change this meeting to a transition meeting and an exit strategy meeting, because absolutely not that I'm gonna be demoted 3 levels down and report to a young lady who has half of the years of experience that I have. So this is what I'm looking for. Now, unfortunately for that leader, he's talking to someone who has negotiated every severance package that had left the company. So I knew what someone at my level with my years of experience had gotten, because my signature was on their severance agreement. So I said to him, so this is what I'm looking for. And I was prepared with, I want this number of months in severance. I need this. I need that. I need this. And in exchange, I will transition professionally. His eyes was the size of quarters. And he says, well, I'm going to have to go back to the CEO. I say, you do that. Because again, I know what has gone out the door. And so you go back to the CEO and let him know what I'm asking for. So, and then I got up, I left the room, I grabbed my purse, and I got in the car. And I called my husband, and he knew this meeting was happening. So he was like, okay, what's the verdict? And I'm seeing red at that point, because I'm like, you're not gonna believe this. And when I told him, he said, what? I said, well, just put it this way. I'm taking the rest of the day off. I'm on my way home. Let me get my mind right before I go back tomorrow. But, having that exchange, right? And having that, having a plan, thinking what you think may happen. And then get in that room, and it's like, oh, I didn't think about that option. It didn't even cross my mind. But you want to arm yourself as much as you can with as much information and play those scenarios out in your head, because I think he was looking for a reaction, clearly, and I think he thought that it was going to be an unprofessional reaction. And I'm like, look, professionalism is one of my top values, so you would never get that out of me. But he wasn't prepared for my comeback to be like, no, I'm turning this to a transition meeting, and we need to talk through the exit strategy, because I am not accepting that. So based on my experience, and I shared this, Angela, with you and a couple of other women that were going through the same thing, I have decided to do a YouTube video series called Pulling Back the Curtain. And I'm
Nice.
going to educate women, or whoever would like to look at the video series, about exit strategies.
Okay.
Right? So, and I'm pulling back the curtain. That's the reason why the name is Pulling Back the Curtain, because my career, I've always been on the other side of the table from the HR perspective, right? I'm usually the one that the person, laid off person is talking to, right? Negotiating. And so I want to share some insight and some juicy nuggets to others
Yes.
around exiting, whether you're caught up in a merger or acquisition, whether you are in a toxic work environment. That's the thing. So I've talked to more than I want to share, a lot of women who are in these toxic work environments. And the first question I ask is, what's your exit strategy? Because look, if you're going to stay there, what are you doing to get out? And you need to be working on getting out as fast as you can. Because again, it's not worth your mental health if you're in a toxic work environment. Now, a lot of us make, we might not can afford to just leave jobs, right? You might can't afford that. And I'm not saying leave your job with no job, but while you're working at that, the crazy place, what are you doing strategically, intentionally to get out? And so this video series, I'm gonna drop the first episode in honor of Women's History Month. I'm scheduling it for March, and it'll
Wonderful.
come out weekly. So and that will be on my YouTube channel. So I'll make sure that we I'll give you the link for that.
Wonderful. Great. I'll definitely share that in the show notes. Well, Lisa, I know I certainly learned a lot from all the gems that you've shared, but I feel like we just touched the surface of these unwritten rules. And I'm pretty sure the listeners probably have more burning questions that we couldn't get to. I would love to invite you back to continue the conversation in season two.
Absolutely. I would love to come back. As you can tell, this is one of my passions.
Yes, we need more conversations like this. So thank you for that. Well, listeners, in the meantime, make sure you head over to Amazon to purchase a copy of Lisa's book, Invisible Professional to Influential Leader. And Lisa, how can our listeners stay connected with you?
So I am on LinkedIn two ways. I'm under my name, Lisa Anderson, and it has a lot of HR certifications behind my name, a lot of letters. So if you just type in Lisa Anderson, SPHR, hopefully it'll pop up. But I also have a business page on LinkedIn. It is my business is called Positively in Pursuit. And that page is on LinkedIn as well. And then I am on Facebook and Instagram as Positively in Pursuit. And my website, www.positivelyinpursuit.com. So those are all the ways to sort of get a hold of me.
And I will make sure all of that is included in the show notes. Listeners, if you have any questions or topics you want Lisa to cover in season two, send me an email at angela@angelavharris.com. Lisa, thank you so much for your time today. I'm looking forward to having you back in season two.
I am too. Thank you so much for having me. And I'm excited. So, yeah, let's do season two. And I love that you're getting emails so we can really dive
Yes.
into what the listeners want to hear.
Great. Well, that's all for today's episode. Until next time.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Flow Podcast. As we wrap up today's episode, always remember your unique path, your voice, and your leadership matter. If you loved what you heard, subscribe now to stay updated on our latest episodes. Take a moment to leave a review and share this episode with someone who can benefit from these conversations. You can stay connected with me on Instagram at The Flow Podcast with Angela, or visit me on the web at angelavharris.com. Until next time, take care, stay inspired, and keep fearlessly leading in your own way.